How many stall accidents wind up getting officially blamed on icing? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We're here to have our usual Monday chat about safety topics. And in the March edition of Over the Airwaves, Bob has an article called Is It Icing or Is It a Stall That Kills? And this may seem like a somewhat academic distinction to somebody who's lost a family member, but for those of us left behind who want to avoid making the mistakes of others, it's kind of important. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Well, Paul, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Let's talk about this now. You brought up the situation of a pilot who took off into really, I wouldn't even call them iffy conditions. It was just plain bad conditions, known bad conditions, and had a bad outcome. But you feel it's important to know whether the difference was airframe ice or a stall that actually caused this plane to hit the ground.
Well, the genesis of this article, Paul, was we've been doing some studying on the number of stall accidents that happen in the United States. Roughly one fatal stall spin accident is recorded by the NTSB per week. And so it's a significant number. But then we began to look at, well, are there other fatal accidents which are attributed to other factors? But when you really look at them, was it a stall indeed that caused the undoing of the flight? And this is particularly apparent in icing accidents. We will read about fatal accidents that occurred as a result of an airplane icing up and the pilot lost control and icing was determined to be the probable cause of the accident. When you go in and look at the record, it becomes readily apparent that the reason the airplane stalled was because the pilot failed to maintain airspeed in the face of increasing drag produced by the ice. In other words, in this particular accident, we have a situation where it's apparent that the airplane was accumulating ice. ATC was insisting that he maintain altitude because of his proximity to the ground. So in an effort to maintain altitude, his speed declined. He had, a lot of drag, load of ice, and the airplane stalled. Now, you know, you have to ask yourself in a situation like that, do I maintain altitude to avoid hitting an obstacle and run the risk of a stall? Or do I, just accept the consequences and maintain airspeed if it means giving up altitude? And that's ultimately the choice that needs to be made, because a stall spin is almost largely unrecoverable close to the ground. But there is a possibility that if we're willing to sacrifice altitude in order to maintain airspeed while laden with ice, we may break out into VFR conditions, low to the ground, and at least have a better choice as to where to go.
Let's set this up just a little bit. This was a Piper PA-32R-301 turbocharged. He took off into conditions that were known to be dicey, but when he was getting close to approach to Akron Canton Airport, he wound up left of the approach course. Was this, do you think, because of an instrumentation error or because he was just already having trouble with the instrument approach?
Well, we have a 500-hour total time pilot here, so he doesn't presumably have a lot of instrument time. So it could have been just a lack of instrument proficiency that caused him to be flying left or right of the localizer. I mean, this is something that all of us do on occasion, and particularly low-time instrument pilots will have some difficulty tracking the localizer in. Now, there were other factors that were certainly compounding his day. He was, as you point out, and as was pointed out in the record, in bad weather. It's very likely that he was accumulating ice. That alone is an enormous distraction. He's disoriented in the clouds, and he's having difficulty controlling the airplane. At the same time, ATC is telling him, insisting that he maintains altitude. He wanted to turn off the localizer and execute a 360-degree turn and come back around. ATC was saying, no, unable, unable, and then telling him to maintain his altitude. Now, this is a Piper Saratoga, fairly capable airplane, but If he is carrying a good deal of ice, he could have full power going into the airplane and unable to maintain altitude. And if he forces that condition by just simply pitching up, we know what's going to happen. The airplane's going to eventually stall. And again, we're only basing this on the NTSB record. There's lots of other factors here that I'm not aware of. But let's assume that ATC was not insisting that he maintain altitude, instead allowing him to slowly lose altitude in an effort to maintain airspeed. Again, in that situation, it's a horrible choice, again, but he may have prevented the stall, and if he prevented the stall, he may have survived the incident.
There's a lot of what-ifs in this, but I guess the answer is there is never a time when it's okay to drop below a certain airspeed. I mean, no matter what else is going on, you're going to stop flying if that happens.
You said it, Paul. You know, what do we say? In all cases, fly the airplane first. Fly the airplane. Now, he had a horrible choice to make, either pitch up to maintain altitude to avoid obstructions. In that condition, if he's laden, heavied up with ice, he may not be able to do that. So he's just going to inadvertently force the airplane into a stall and likely a spin. We have an unequal load on the wings with icing. Chances of keeping that coordinated are fairly remote. So he's going to wind up in a stall spin. The other choice is pitch down in order to achieve sufficient airspeed to sustain lift. But choice two may cause him to impact the ground, and very likely he will. Now, of those two horrible choices, theoretically, which offers a modicum of a better outcome? Hitting the ground wings level in the descent versus hitting the ground out of a stall spin. The latter is not survivable. I would rather take my chances in a descent and hit the ground while still flying rather than hit the ground as out of a stall spin. You know, it's a bad situation, but hopefully this doesn't happen close to the ground. We had a serious accident a number of years ago that he iced up in the clouds. He kept the airplane on the autopilot. The autopilot was doing its job in maintaining altitude, you know, that was dialed into the autopilot. The pilot was unaware of the decreasing airspeed. The airplane ultimately stalled because the autopilot's holding an ever-increasing pitch. And when he stalled, at least he had enough sense to pull the ballistic recovery chute, and I believe he survived the incident. But what was it that caused the need to blow to use the chute in the first place? Was it icing? Not necessarily. He was at a safe altitude. All he would have had to do was just allow the airplane to go into a gentle descent in order to maintain flying speed and then accept the consequences further on down. He may have found himself into warmer air. He may have found himself into VFR conditions. He may have found a situation where he could have ultimately shed that ice and survived the day. So it wasn't the icing that caused the accident, in my opinion, in most of these cases. It's the stall that results from a contaminated airframe that results when we try to maintain altitude. That's an airmanship problem, not an ice problem.
Bob, when we come back from the break, let's mention an accident this topic can't help but bring to mind, especially in your neck of the woods. Bob Miller is my guest. More in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack here with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob, we've been talking about airframe icing, neglecting to maintain airspeed. This was almost the Colgan 3407 story, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, in a sense that the pilot, in an effort for some reason, in that case, he pulled back when the airplane was screaming to avoid a stall, you know, with the stick pusher and the stick shaker. But you're right, and you can reduce this entire argument down to just one very simple principle. And again, I'm saying this from personal experience. When in a bad situation in an airplane, whether in icing conditions or in extreme turbulence, by all means, we have to protect that airspeed. If we can protect the airspeed, then we can protect lift. And if we can protect lift, then we continue to fly. But if we lose track of that airspeed and instead concentrate on the altimeter, we may have full power in and be unable to maintain desired altitude, and we're going to stall.
Well, Bob, hopefully we're getting to the time of year when icing conditions will be a little less prevalent.
Paul, let me jump in here real fast. Not only icing can cause this, but again, thunderstorm activity in the summertime, where we get into extreme turbulence. You know, we're taught to dial it back to maneuvering speed, so we pull the power back, and this is the right thing to do. But in the process of pulling it back to maneuvering speed, we can allow that speed to decay well below maneuvering speed and wind up in a stall in extreme turbulence. And here again, the most important instrument on board any aircraft, in my opinion, is that airspeed indicator, because that's telling us whether or not we have the ability to fly. If we're not concentrating on the airspeed indicator, whether in extreme turbulence, whether carrying ice, or even coming around the pattern in an approach to landing, if we lose track of the airspeed indicator and lose track of the airspeed of the aircraft, bam, then this fatal stall scenario can easily emerge. And one of the problems that that I think we uncovered in our research over the last couple of months is the fact that so many of us are not being taught how to properly recognize an impending stall and how to recover from a stall when it happens. We showed through surveys that less than half of the examiners are even testing our primary pilots through the full stall break on the private pilot test. So this stall is a major factor, and almost a major factor, I would say, in nearly all, and this is a bold leap of logic perhaps, but in nearly all fatal accidents, I'm willing to wager that you can find a very strong presence of a stall component in the final, you know, phase of that flight.
Well, Bob, as always, lots to think about and important to think about, and it makes us look at accident statistics in a whole new way, and we appreciate your insight. We will look for you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find Bob Miller's newsletter, Over the Airwaves, and more information about Bob Miller flight training at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.